Welcome to the Unspoken Truths of Digital Leadership, Living the Leadership Values. Our guests will talk about the unspoken truths of leadership, the values, the dark side and the learnings from dealing with conflict with integrity. Discover how they lead more effectively, how they make decisions, how they live their leadership values, and how they deal with the consequences that happen because of the decisions that they make. I am John O'Poon, I will be your host of the show. Please note that there may be explicit language used during the interview. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hey, and welcome to another episode of the Unspoken Truths of Digital Leadership, Living the Leadership Values. I guess we'll talk about the unspoken truths of leadership, the dark side and the learnings from dealing with conflict with integrity. And today I have Russell Nolherty. He is a USA Today best-selling author of science fiction and fantasy books that are both entertaining and thought-provoking. Thank you, Russell, for coming.
Thank you for having me.
It's awesome to have you here. For those that don't know what you do, you know, from writing books and then being an author, but how did you come across writing books or writing science fiction?
Sure. So I mostly write fantasy. I write a little bit of science fiction, but my main genre is fantasy. But I started working in production and such in 2004 for movies and TV. I worked on Capitol Hill, interviewing senators and congressmen. Then I started shooting and directing my own stuff. And then I moved into comics sort of in 2010 after I moved to LA. And then in 2014, I started my company, Wannabe Press, which publishes a lot of my work, but then also anthologies with other people in it.
How did you come? What made you start into your own company?
I mean, so I've worked in production for most of my adult life, and you just have your own company. Like, there's not a lot of employees in production. You're always a 1099 contractor. Or you have what they call in production a loan out company, which is basically an LLC that you set up to pay yourself. And so it's never really been a question. I just always knew that I was going to be an entrepreneur and have my own company. I didn't even think about it as entrepreneurship really until several years later. It was just the thing you did. It's sort of like, in order to be one of you had to be an entrepreneur and you had to be entrepreneurial, at least getting your own freelance gigs and such.
And what kind of skill set did you develop in terms of developing as an entrepreneur? Because you said, like yourself, you didn't realize it was called entrepreneurship or being an entrepreneur, even if it was a thing. So what type of skill sets did you develop to, I suppose, was it everything that you used in production that you learned?
I mean, so what I've learned over starting many, many companies is that the things that I learned were kind of relevant to all companies that I've ever started. So word of mouth, like referrals, all of production pretty much runs on referrals and nepotism. So, you know, you get in with one production crew and then they get onto the next crew and they hire you again and again and again and again. And sort of it can be good if you want to do that work, but bad if like you're, you know, I worked a lot in craft services, which is fine. But like I didn't like particularly enjoy craft services, like doing the food things. It just was a thing that I ended up being very good at. Because I would actually bring like healthy snacks to set and not just like chips and garbage. So word of mouth, also being able to change like what other people do. So, you know, as I mentioned, other craft service people would bring like garbage, like snacks to set. And the things that the people liked about me was I would always go and I would get like fruit and I would get like veggies and I would get some garbage too, but I would mostly focus on like healthy food. And more than once people commented about how much they appreciated having like options. And I didn't always have the same options. Usually lunch would be just like what lunch was and I would go pick it up. So, but like I had the option for like whatever the snacks were going to be on set.
How did you develop? So is it key building relationships then when you're contracting with so many different groups and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, anything that you do, any entrepreneurship thing is about relationships. So it's either about the, it's about two different kinds of relationships. So it's about the relationship between yourself and the fans or customers that you have. And then it's about the relationship between yourself and the network that you have. So there are two very different things. And most of the time, people at the beginning of their careers combine the two. And while certainly a lot of people in my network also read my books, my network and my fandom are two very different things, and I talk to them in two very different ways. So my fandom is set up to talk about my books and other interests that we have that align with my books. So like mythology and fairy tales and general dark things like death, grief, loss, and junk. Like that's comics, cool, like fantasy books and such that we find. Like that's all like what my fandom talks about. My network is about sort of growing us together as a unit so that we can hit the next level. It's about making strategic partnerships with people. It's about getting things together. JV partnerships is about doing launching and helping ourselves launch books better. It's about planning to like get ourselves a wider reach than we previously had. And I have two main companies, and they're both set up. My Wannabe Press is set up to deal with my fandom, and then my Complete Creative site is meant to deal with my network. And so one of them is about leveling up your game as a creative entrepreneur, and one of them is about cool books that I have and I have found and such. And even the emails that I send are quite different between the two of them. The partnerships that I come up with, products that we launch and all of that stuff. So I think that it's not just referrals and relationship building. It's two different kinds of things. And I expect that if somebody was in my fandom and they had a friend who really loved fantasy books, they would tell those people that like Russell makes really good fantasy books. And if same person had a friend who was an author or other creative, they would say Russell has a really good like creative academy that he does called The Complete Creative. And so it's not just about referrals. It's about like curating the right referrals to the right kinds of things. And even when you're in a certain business, you almost are starting from scratch with each new type of product that you launch, not completely from scratch, especially if you're doing like one-on-one coaching to courses to like membership sites. But when you're doing something like different formats, for instance, moving from comics to novels, it's almost like starting literally from scratch again and building up from one person. Not 100% from one person, but like there is far less carryover than I expected going from comics to novels, and also comics to nonfiction books. And all of those things have been their own little ecosystem that I've had to crack individually.
So each genre will have their own different structures.
Yes. So like, that's why I don't like, I say that I'm a fantasy author now, because like there's a lot, while I do sci-fi and do horror, the thing that is like, I don't have the energy to market myself as a multiple different kind of author and multiple different genres. So I mainly focus on mythological fantasy, monsters, magic, and mythology. And fairy tales, those are the kinds of main genre points. And I know that if I find those people, then it'll be, if I just focus on those people, then it'll be a lot easier for me to have a lower cost per click or a cost per acquisition. So instead of just saying I'm an author, I say that I'm a fantasy author. And really, I say that I'm a mythological fantasy author. So like, if you like mythology, you're probably going to like my stuff. I think that if you like any kind of fantasy or thrillers even, then you'll enjoy my work. But I'm trying to go for the audience that has the most likely chance of responding to my work.
So you're niching down really narrowly.
Yeah, which is tough because, mythological fantasy specifically is quite a small audience of overall potential fans. But at the... the upside is that I don't have to worry as much about bad reviews or trying to convince somebody to like give science fiction a try, like any of my books. Because like when I first started, you know, I was doing mystery, thriller, children's stuff, comics and novels and horror. And it's just like, it's hard for me to be like, what does Russell Nolte do? It took many, many years, probably about a decade, for me to be like, this is the kind of genre that Russell Nolte makes. This is the kind of thing Russell Nolte does. Like, if you like that kind of thing, then there is a place for you in my fandom. If you don't, then that's okay. Like, maybe you'll like one book, you'll pop in and pop out. Maybe you'll like none of my books. But I'm looking for the person who's not just going to come and buy one book, but is going to come and buy multiple books of mine, which means I've been focusing a lot more on series now and a lot more on like niching down the kinds of things that I offer. I'm actually, and with the Complete Creative, considering like rebranding the whole thing again, even though I just rebranded it at the beginning of this year, to focus more on authors specifically than all creatives, because you know, what you don't want to be is that one who, something that is palatable to all people, because you then get washed in the crowd. What you want to be known for is like the number one person in whatever specific thing that you're doing. So I have a management team. I live in Los Angeles, so I have a management team, my first management team, not the current one, but the one I first had when I first moved here, was like, you need to be the top three writer in one category. I don't care what the category is, but like, you've got to be like, when someone writes a list, you've got to get like to the top three, because if you're not in the top three, then they're not even going to consider you. And like, if you're 10 of every list, it doesn't matter. You're going to get washed out by someone who was the top three each time. And that really resonated with me back then. Not right away, but as time has gone on, I've started to realize that, you know, people associate me with Lovecraft, a lot of Lovecraft work and Cthulhu mythology and overall mythology stuff, especially like Greek and Roman mythology, a little bit of fairy tales. So when people are talking about me and someone says, oh, like, I really am looking for a good book, like mythology book or mythology retelling or fairy tale retelling, like I want to be in the top of that conversation, because how often do you refer more than like three books? I've never like given someone a list of like 50 books to check out. I'm like, okay, yeah. Try N.K. Jemisin's series or try this or try that, depending on what your interests are. But so my goal has been recently to like really get in the top of the conversation about like those kinds of ideas and then be comfortable leaving the rest of them behind.
Mm-hmm. So is that similar to like when people talk about personal development or entrepreneurship books? People would say, oh, Tim Ferriss, 4-Hour Work Week. Then you got Gary Vee. Then you got Simon Sinek. Like, be that kind of top in that conversation in your genre.
Yeah, whatever the genre is. And that includes pretty much anything, whether it's podcasts or data. So I have a fear of the Complete Creative that in trying to incorporate all creativity into it and like all kinds of creative people, it puts me far down a list of like a lot, like I'm on a list of a lot of good podcasts or a lot of good resources. But when someone's like, oh, you're an author, you should go check out the Complete Creative. Like, people aren't immediately like connecting with that. Whereas if I changed it to something like, I don't know, like the badass author or like the badass writer or something, it's like, oh, or like, you know, not another authorship podcast or like, whatever the thing is, like if I can find a way to connect with the people who most often use my services, which are authors, like 90% of the people that hire me or like take my courses are authors or comic book creators. So like, should I scale down to that level or should I like continue being wide, because I've spent the last year building this kind of, or 3 years building this one kind of brand. And I think that the more that I do with the niching down and having success with the books, the more I sort of see the error of this, like, be a one thing to everyone. And like someone like James Wedmore or Amy Porterfield or something, you know, they got to be successful being doing one thing well. You know, they got to be successful doing when it was Amy Porterfield, you know, she was doing digital courses, and everyone has their kind of like one singular niche, and they became like the name to think of in that one niche. And then they kind of did their broadening out, like to Marketing Made Easy or Business by Design or whatever that thing is. And James Wedmore, I think, did YouTube videos, and Gary Vee also did YouTube. And, you know, all of these people had a very like singular focus, and that allowed them to like cut through the noise. And I fear that with all of the work that I've done in my life, it was very broad, which helped in a lot of ways for me, but it doesn't help for someone to be like, what you want someone to be is like, okay, so like I'm an author. Like you've just said the complete creative is a thing that like I should look at, but like, how do I connect these two dots? Like, there's nothing in just the name or the branding or the aesthetic that like specifically screams like, hey, author, I'm here to help you, or like whatever the thing is, or really any creative. It's like, I use the word creative, but like that could be all sorts of things. But in reality, I'm not all sorts of things. Like, I really help a very specific subset of those people. It's been a struggle for me for the past year to be like, okay, I have all this sunk cost into this one thing. Like, do I continue this one thing, even though I think that probably focusing down more would give somebody the immediate thing? Like, for instance, we have a book called Cthulhu is Hard to Spell. It's behind me somewhere. Cthulhu is Hard to Spell. Like, immediately, you know, like, if you're into that brand or not. It's like, do you like Lovecraft? Do you like snarky things? Like, do you like, you immediately see the cover and you're like, oh, I know. Like, I'm there, or I'm not there. So I become much better at doing that over the course of my career. And I think it's really important, because there's so much noise that you really have an image or like a second to be like, yes, I want that thing. Or like, I think that that thing can help me. And frankly, if you can make that connection, the thing doesn't even have to be that helpful. Like, it just like has to be the brand that people refer you to, and then you kind of have this connection with it. So I think that like niching down in the way we were talking about, or becoming the name of the like that people talk about when they talk about one thing, ends up like helping you more than being broader and more expansive in the kinds of offerings that you have.
So in your decades of experience with creating and authoring books, what would you say digital leadership is for you in terms of positioning? Is because you said that you've been working towards narrowing down, niching down to really focused, singular one thing.
Yeah, so I believed for a while that I should be everything to everybody, right? And like, I think that most digital entrepreneurs go through that. And like, well, if I could make a living, if I could get like one client doing one-on-one services, or like three course sales and like four people in my membership community, then like whatever, like money's money. But like, that's a really difficult life to have, because you really, in order to have any traction, you need to be pushing on one lever. Whatever the lever is that is giving you the most return, and the one that you're willing to spend the most time on, frankly, you know, not to keep bringing up the complete creative, but it's a wonderful website. I just put zero effort into it. Like, I do a podcast. I don't put any marketing money behind it. Like, I don't put any marketing money behind SEO or any of that stuff. Like, I spend a lot of time writing the content and getting in, like building the courses. But then like, I kind of don't do any marketing for it. And so shockingly, it like doesn't do anything. Whereas I spend tons of time in Wannabe Press, even though I get less return per book sale at Wannabe Press, you know, I spend so much time there. I'm always talking about Wannabe Press. I'm always doing podcasts. I'm always doing press. I know we talked about like, I'm not going to be doing a lot of shows in the near future, But I discount, like, except for Wannabe Press, like, except for my books, I'm going to do book podcasts because, like, that is the obvious, like, it's like, I don't even have to say it to myself. It's like, I'm not going to do any of these other things, but I'm going to do whatever it takes for Wannabe Press and, like, for my books to be successful. So I think you have to really, like, go to that place and be like, well, what is the thing that I am both passionate about that I'm willing to put in the effort and that I'm getting return from? Because if I wasn't getting a return from Wannabe Press then at all, then I wouldn't be, like, I'd be stupid to continue doing that. But I am getting traction with Wannabe Press. Like, I am getting traction in the way that, like, I want. It's not nearly as successful as The Complete Creative would be if I put the same amount of energy in there, but I am getting, like, return from that investment that I'm making, and more return the more books that I have and the more things that I'm doing and the more that I focus down. But on the same, so in that same token, like, the thing that I do for digital leadership is mostly for The Complete Creative. It's mostly like, watch me have success. And then if you want that success too, here are the guidelines for how you would also have that success.
You touched upon Wannabe Press not generating as much return as Complete Creative. Is it because you're more fulfilled doing Wannabe Press?
Absolutely. But, like, look, Wannabe, The Complete Creative, I think I had a list of 300 people that returned me like $60,000 of money last year. Like, that is an insanely high ROI. Like, that's just a crazy good, like, return on investment for, like, plus courses over there cost me nothing to maintain. And, I spent $400 a year on the website for The Complete Creative and all of the stuff over there. And, you know, it returns me without me even trying tens of thousands of dollars. Like I said, last year, $60,000 with almost no effort of marketing. Meanwhile, I spend tens of thousands of dollars on books and marketing and just effort for Wannabe Press to make the same money. You know, our mailing list for Wannabe Press is 60,000, that's 20,000 people or something around that. And I get about $60,000 from that side of my business last year. So literally for the same effort. Oh, and not only that, but I went to about 30 conventions last year, and, like, I just spent like tens of thousands of dollars on marketing and mailing list building and all of that stuff to get, like, almost no return comparatively to, like, Complete Creative that I did nothing for and I made a ton of returns. So, like, any smart business would be like, you should go and scale up The Complete Creative. But it's not that I don't care. I say I don't care, but, like, it's not that I very much want, like, I think The Complete Creative is a great brand. It's got, like, over 400 blog posts. It's got, like, 200 episodes of its podcast. It's got, you know, multiple courses. Like, it's a beautiful brand. But I just, like, I can't, whenever I have 500 extra dollars to spend on marketing, like, I'm not putting it there. I'm putting it into Wannabe Press. So, you know, over the decades that I've been doing this, I just, like, have learned that I need either a partner for The Complete Creative, or, like, I just need to understand that it's not going to go anywhere unless I, like, put effort into it or something else. But yeah, I mean, the Wannabe Press brand works because I spend, like, every waking minute thinking about it and, like, researching it and writing books for it and doing stuff for it. And meanwhile, The Complete Creative is sitting over there. And, like, if I put just literally the littlest amount of effort into it, it, like, is a license to print money. And yet I just can't do it.
Is it because you enjoy the process so much in Wannabe Press?
Yeah, I want people to read my books. Like, I want to create things and have people read them. That's like the reason I'm here. And I don't mean, like, read my nonfiction work. I mean, like, read my fiction work and the worlds that I have put together.
That's interesting. It's fascinating because that's something that you love, and you, I just see your eyes just light up when you're talking about Wannabe Press compared to when you talk about Complete Creative.
Well, I mean, the thing with The Complete Creative is, like, look, I'm not saying anything new. I'm hopefully putting a new spin on it, but, like, there's no new marketing advice. There's just marketing advice that will work. And like the minute that you see the right stuff, like things snap together. Whereas with Wannabe Press, like I'm literally creating brand new stuff and brand new worlds like every single day. It's like a completely different experience. And the challenge for me is making all of the worlds and making them work and then making someone care about them. Like it's not in getting someone to like buy a course on like how to build your audience. Cause like, while it is the best course on the market about building an audience, like hands down, easily the best course, it's like a pain point. Like, of course, like that's something that of course I'm going to be able to convince you to do. Like, A, I'm a great salesperson. B, like the course is amazing and incredible and like well worth 50 times the cost that I charge for it. So like there's not that there's no skill, but like there's like the skill to me is being like, you like a book and like, I know you have a limited amount of money, but like, here is this thing that like will enrich your soul, but not like change your life. Like it won't like make you a better salesperson. It's just going to edify your soul and like allow you to like escape and like hopefully fill you with joy. Like that to me is the challenge. Like that's the challenge of like, don't go read Harry Potter again. Come and read this weird book that I made. And I mean, it's a lovely, wonderful challenge. But it's so different than like pain point selling and like every other kind of sales that I've ever done and every kind of effort that I've ever put into something. Like every other piece of effort that I've ever done, things get easier as you do more of them. But with writing books, it's just as challenging to write my 20th book as it was to write my first book. Like the challenge is equally, and there's nothing else in my life that is as challenging, has been as challenging for as long as writing books has. Not even writing comics got easier over time, but like writing a novel is literally just as hard today as it was when I wrote my first one in 2011.
Wow. And what do you do when do you have writer's blocks and stuff like that? How do you overcome those kind of, do you just...
I just like write. Like, I know I sit down at the thing and write. You know, writer's block is a couple of things. One, you're working on the wrong project. And you don't care enough to continue on because writing is very hard. Two, like you've written yourself into a corner, and those are great because now you have to write yourself out of that corner. And like I think that makes great literature when like you see somebody write themselves into a corner, like how are they going to get out of that? And like, I like writing myself into corners and like outlining myself into corners. The other part of it, of writer's block, is just like, you're numb to like life. And like, look, you're dealing with too much stuff. And like, you need to go out and like experience more things or read more stuff, or like you're just creatively bereft and you need to fix that part and like fuel your tank again. And all of those things are valid, like reasons to have writer's block. But like, as far as like writer's block for the sake of writer's block, you just have to sit down and like outline your thing or like know where you're going and know that when you first start, you're going to suck. Like, I'm sorry, you suck as a writer. You're a bad writer. You're awful. Like, you're just terrible. And like, let that like flow through you and just be okay with it. And like, things get better over time as you get to be a better writer. But you know, most people sit down and they're like, this is no good. And you're like, you're right, it's no good. Cause like, you've never done it before. So like, just keep writing or don't. You know, we have this whole thing in our society where it's like giving up is like a bad thing, but like I give up all the time. Like I have so many like projects that have failed. Like I have so many things that just like I do not finish. Like so much stuff I walk away from. And like every successful person I've ever met has walked away from dozens, hundreds of things over the course of their career. And I think that what you walk away from is just as important as what you finish.
How do you decide when to walk away from projects?
So I set boundaries. So when partnerships, it's a lot easier because when you're starting a partnership, you should be working very small at first and setting small boundaries and making sure that they can cross those small boundaries. And, you know, if you set a deadline and you all agree to that deadline, then you do the thing in that time frame. And that's really easy if you can work small. Now, here's the thing is like when people don't meet that deadline, you have to abandon the project. Like that's the rule. Like you can't just let them break the time limit. And it doesn't matter whether it was like their mother got sick or like they just forgot, or like unless they reach out to you and tell you specifically and then you give them like a one strike thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if they fail to deliver on small properties, they will never deliver on the big stuff ever. They will never do it. It just will not happen. Like at some point they are going to let you down. And it's only when you like can both, when you both are doing half the work or a third of the work or like whatever percent of the work that like they're going to do to get whatever their percentage is, that it's going to work out, that it can work out. By yourself, I say whenever my creative spark is gone for a project and I don't think I can get it back, then I abandon it. Like I abandon it or I try and add something else to it because, you know, there are people that I really love working with. And then like, I will just, so like a lot of times the thing that keeps me going on a project is just the person I'm working with. Mm-hmm. But also just walking away from a project and then realizing that you love it or you want to do more in that world is a great way. So like I have a podcast, I walked away from it for 2 years. I realized that I loved it. I brought it back. I'm kind of disillusioned with it right now. So I don't know, maybe I walk away from it again. Like, I don't know like what the answer is, but I know that like there's only so much stuff that you can do and push forward successfully. Can't push forward 100 things successfully at once. So I ask myself a couple of questions when I'm starting a project now. And this works for me because I have so many great projects that I've worked on. And the first one is this better than anything else you're working on now? It almost never the first question is this really a good project? Like, is it really like, does it have legs? Is it like something that you get excited about? And then two is it better than any project that you're currently working on? And then three is, am I willing to waste my spare time, my precious spare time working on it? And usually everything is a no for one of those three things. And if it's a no for one of them, then sometimes it gets into my discarded projects folder that I run through about once a quarter. And other times I just like completely abandon it outright. And the same thing goes with projects that I'm working on. I want to see them to the end but the things you see to the end become the things that you're known for. And often you don't want to be known for the thing that you're like working on. Like if something better pops up, like I think that you should be fair to like look at that other project and be like, would I rather be known for this thing? You know, I have now finished many, many projects and I can tell you that like, I'm known as the things that I made by whatever that thing is. Like somebody knows me for all of the stuff that I've made. And like, it's hard. And while the work is great, like there's some things that I would have been like, if I could take that away and instead work on like do another God's First book or like do this secret project that I'm working on and I could spend another year doing it, that would be better. That would have been better than doing this project. And in retrospect, I realized that the time spent working on a project oftentimes is very beneficial because like just the work on it makes you a better writer, better creator, better at just doing that thing. But often it's a loss of opportunity cost to do the actual thing. So spending that 6 months working on that project or 3 months or 1 month is a month you can't be working on finding the other thing or the next thing. And at the beginning of your career, I think you need to have that time to just like safe space to fail, like work on all of the stuff. But at some point, like it's, you want it to become a job. Like it has to, you have to be thinking of like every project I take on means I can't take on another project. And once I get past a certain place on a project, then I have to keep going because it's now closer to the end than at the beginning. I spend less money, keep continuing on. And so You know, for instance, like to do a real books of like to, for a book to come out, like it really needs to be a series in order for it to hit. So you really need to be thinking about like a million words. So like, am I willing to write a million words into this series? Am I good enough to write a million words into this series? If not, then maybe you're still at that beginning stage of like, but like if you're working as a self-published person or even a publisher, like they're going to want a series of books from you because they're going to want to be able to keep promoting it. And you have to keep thinking, is this the thing I'm going to be known for? Is this the thing I want to be known for? Is this, am I willing to spend the next 3 years of my life working on this thing? And not just for the destination, but just for the journey itself of working on that part. And it's a critically important piece of the puzzle that we don't talk about when, you know, talk about digital leadership for others, but like it's also digital leadership for yourself. It's also leading yourself to the place you want to go.
And where do you draw your inspiration from?
This is the question that I get asked that I just can't answer. I mean, that's like asking a nurse, like, how do you put in an IV and like so easily? It's like practice and truth, or there's so many things that you just do instinctively. You know, frankly, the things that I get draw my inspiration from are like the books that I'm reading and the things that I'm doing. And then randomly, after I've consumed enough stuff, like some idea will pop into my head that is like so perfect that I'm like, yes, that's the one. Like that's the one that I keep thinking about and I keep coming back to. And like, that's going to be the next project. But like, it takes a lot now, because in order to pass the threshold of, is this project better than all of my projects? Like not to put too fine a point of it, but like I am a world-class writer and creator, and like the things that I put out, like I have a high, very high expectation for. So for it to be better than the thing that I'm working on right now takes a lot. And like, it's a lot of thought that goes into the whole plan for a series or a whole plan for a launch. And so I put a lot of effort into those things. So for it to be better than those things takes a whole heck of a lot. And it's hard for me to believe that like, many things can, and I've seen many, most things will never pass that threshold of like, is this better than what you're working on? And the things that do, or like even reach that bar, you know, I've had one idea in the past 2 years that I think thought was worth exploring, like on top of all of the work that I've already done. It's a tough thing to have inspiration, but it's a tougher thing to like follow through and know that this is going to be the kind of story that you want to tell. This is the kind of thing you want to focus on.
And what kind of positive, healthy habits would you say you put in? Do you have like meditation or exercising? And do you feel those are important in your structure, in your routines?
Yeah, I don't do meditation. I don't like meditation. I make sure I pretty much only drink water and decaf tea. Mm-hmm. I try and go for a long walk once a day at least, or preferably twice a day, once with like my dog and once just by myself. I try to read at least 3 books a week. Often I can't get there recently because I can't go to the library, and it's just tougher for me to get into reading on an iPad. I try and do nice things with my wife or for my wife. And then I always try to make sure that instead of saying I am a failure or I am a success, to say I am a person who succeeds or I am a person who fails, but I also have hundreds of other things. And I also make sure to say like this project is not, to put my expectations. So like my novel projects are just, they're less popular than my comics projects. They always have been. I hope they won't always be, but like they, up until this point, they always have been. And so I have to be able to say like, okay, so if I do a Cthulhu book, like it's going to be my most successful launch. If I do an Ichabod book, it's going to be a very successful launch, but like not as high as Cthulhu. And then like, if I do a novel launch, it's going to be less than that. So trying to just plan and have time in the day for space and to think. So I work every day pretty much the same. from 6 to 9 o'clock in the morning, I kind of let myself roam free. I maybe go for a walk. I do email. I do, you know, I have breakfast with my wife. And then from 9 to 2 or 9 to 3, I'm really like writing or doing the job of writing. And then from about 2 to 5, I take off. I try to like take a nap or take a walk or do something for myself. And then 5 to 7 or 5 to 6, whenever I come back to the computer, I have meetings and I have other stuff to do. So I try to keep myself structured in that way as well.
And what other things, do you have any other activities that you do for time for yourself? Like you said, you go for walks and stuff, but do you do anything like?
Nope. I write, I walk, I read, hang out with my wife. Sometimes I watch TV. But yeah, I mean, the things that I'm doing for my job consume my life. So, and I'm happy that they do that. I feel fulfilled doing that. But yeah, I don't have hobbies outside of like the reading and writing of books, pretty much.
So gaming and stuff is no.
Nope. Don't do any of that stuff. I like I said, I have a pretty structured life. I've incorporated the things that I love into the things that I do. And I mean, the things that I do for fun would be like my own podcast, like then like talking about business and like those sorts of things. But I don't have hobbies. My hobby was writing, and writing became my life. So.
So it's embedded with your work-life balance.
Yeah. I mean, the work-life balance is more like I just stop working for a lot of time. And like, I then hang out with my wife and do other things. So yeah, I think work-life balance is important, but like, I don't have hobbies in the way that people talk about hobbies. And like, I don't have any of those things. Like happily, I don't have any of those things, you know? You know, every once in a while, like we'll do a paint night. You can see the paintings behind me. You can, but like, yeah, I don't have any desire for hobbies. So like, it's not like I could go and play video games for those 3 hours I take off a day, but instead I prefer to just think about stuff.
So do you do a lot of visualization as well when you're doing your planning and stuff?
No, I do a lot of like, I have every book series kind of has like a notebook that I write stuff down in, but I try to take things very slow. So for instance, the idea that I talked to you about, I had it a couple months ago, and it'll probably take 2 years before it like actually comes to fruition, because I'll have to just do a lot of thinking about it. And like, it'll come to me in like fits and starts. And then I'll finish my series, hopefully, that I've been working on for the last 2 years. And then I'll be ready to like start this new thing. But yeah, I don't do like, I more just let it come to me than like do like active visualization of like what the world is going to look like.
Yeah. How often you see you document your archives? Do you ever look back at them and go, oh, maybe I could revisit that one because it's come to fruition?
Yes. So every about 3 to 6 months, I go back to my archive of like projects I haven't done, and I try to figure out how I can smash a bunch of them together into a new thing. A lot of my work is just taking like 10, like one really good idea and like 5 to 10 mediocre ideas that had like maybe a nugget, and like smashing them all into one thing. And like, by having one thing, it becomes more resilient and having more like flesh than just like that one awesome idea alone. So I'm probably in the next couple of days will go through all of my old material, because I'm starting a new book, and see like if there's something there that I can take, but or even take from old good ideas that like didn't quite get incorporated the way that I wanted to. And so yeah, I do definitely have that, like go back and rip great like nugget of an idea from an okay mediocre project.
Have you considered getting your books into made into movies or like series or animations or things like that?
That's not a thing. So like, you can't just do that. That's not like people make it seem like you just like snap your fingers and like, it's a decade long process to get that stuff done. I've been in Hollywood for 12 years now. And like most everyone that I know has maybe done one or two projects in that time. So I really wish that people would not ask that question or make it seem like it was so easy. Like you cannot do it. It's not a thing you can just do. Like it is nearly impossible to get something through production and out there. So this idea that like you can just be like, oh, I'm going to make things into a movie or a TV show are just like, they're impossible. That's an impossible dream that like will not happen unless you're spending all of your time doing it.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Sorry, I didn't know.
No, it's okay. It's just like, this is a thing that I deal with a lot. Are your books movies? And I'm like, it's not easy. Like it's not an easy process to like take a book and turn it into a movie. Like it's hundreds, thousands of people that have to like go through the process to like get something that comes onto your screen. For every project that makes it to your TV, there are at least 1,000 that have been optioned at some point along the way and then fallen off. There's probably a million that have been pitched and then like discarded. So like you're literally talking about the things that make it to screen, like one in a million ideas and like hundreds of millions of dollars behind those ideas. So you like, it's a very, very, very select group of things that like actually make it to the screen at the end of the day.
And is that working again with like the people you work with, relationships and partnerships?
So like it's like a management teams and then like trying to like build out like groups of people. So like getting the right director and producer attached, like going into pitch studios and just like you only get one shot. So like you also want to make sure it's the best project that it can be before you start going in and pitching all of the people that need to be like brought on board. But I would say that we've had a project that we've been in development with for about 2 years and we're just now getting ready to actually like bring it out to production.
Wow. So what would you, if you was to advise people who wanted to get into writing, what would you advise them to, apart from just writing, just start?
I mean, it takes about 20 books to like really have success as an author or even start to have success as an author. So you really need to start thinking of it as a career. You know, the next 5 years of your life can be spent doing this. And it feels like a lot of time, but by the end of that 5 years, like you will not realize how quickly it goes. So yeah, I like to tell people, A, don't make your dream project first because you suck at writing. So like go write something that you don't care about very much. Like if you love romance, go write a fantasy. If you love fantasy, go write a thriller. If you love thrillers, go write like a science fiction, or like write something that you like but don't love so that like you don't have that high standard that you will have for your own genre. Understand that your taste is good, but your actual skill level is abysmal. So like just keep growing over time. Finish projects, like don't let things be abandoned because it's only in finishing that thing that you really like understand it. So like don't just do one draft and be like, it's probably good enough. Like really like hone it, which is one of the reasons why I abandon projects so easily now, because like it takes a long time to not just write a thing, but then like edit the thing and then get the editor to the thing and like get the cover design and like do all that stuff. And I'm not saying you should get an editor, but I am saying that like you should get it to the point that like you're happy to show it around and then do your next thing. Like also, you know, I'd like to have a stockpile of about 8 books every time that I do a Kickstarter or do a launch, I like to have like 4 to 8 books that are ready to go for the next launch. And so every time I launch, I've got about 4 to 8 books. So like I've already got, I launch about 4 books at a time. So every time I do a launch, I've already got the next launch like queued up and ready to go so that I can make sure that like I am ahead of whatever my deadline is.
Wow. That's some powerful golden advice there. And yeah, I think that's, if people wanted to find out more about what you do, where can they go?
Sure. If you like monsters, mythology, and magic, head on over to russellnolte.com and join my mailing list and see the other books that I've done. If you are a creative yourself and want to hear about my musings of creativity, then thecompletecreative.com is the place to go. It's broken up into three sections. Breathe, which is mindset. Create, which is creativity and like how to make better stuff. And then sell, which is all about sales and marketing. And like whatever place you're in, there should be a place that you can onboard let yourself and get a lot of value.
Amazing. Thank you very much, Russell.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Unspoken Truths of Digital Leadership. I hope you found this interview insightful and useful. Please remember to subscribe and review the podcast. And if you have found it useful, please feel free to send it and share it to your network, as I will be very appreciative that it will spread and help out more people in the world. If you would like more information or the show notes and resources that I will be providing you, then please go to www.johnopoon.com, go to the blog and find the podcast section. Step up, show up, and stay up. Take care.